Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 333 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
I am doing pretty well today and excited to dig in on this topic. We're talking about helping people in hard times. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something a lot of us could relate to over the last couple of years because, duh. Do I even need to go into why? Maybe just, most of us.
I like duh. Duh is good.
Like most of us have some experience with, you know, with hard things over the last couple of years. And also I think that's just like a recurring thing. And sometimes a hard thing can be a fun and great thing. Like you just had a baby. That's really hard, but it's really great. And sometimes it's like, oh, I just lost my job and my mom is sick. And my husband and I aren't getting along. And sometimes it's that kind of hard. And so like we all experience like a wide variety of different kinds of hard times. So I think today we're just going to have kind of a free flowing conversation about just the process of like recognizing what we need when we're having hard times, how that can be different for everybody, knowing how to help friends, especially if those friends or loved ones, like sometimes the way they need help is not the way you need help. And sometimes we can't even really recognize when we are having a hard time. So maybe the first place to start is just by defining for us what that is and how we even recognize it for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and I even want to back up a teeny bit, which is I was thinking as we were preparing for this, that our family of origin and how we saw helping others or being helped modeled as kids probably informs some of this too. And it's very, very specific to each family and possibly regional or cultural. I'm thinking about like if you grew up in a church community that was like right on top of like the meal trains and the helping people and the different rituals around when somebody passed away or when somebody was ill, versus if you didn't grow up in a community like that, you may have seen it. Hopefully you still saw ways to be empathetic and ways to help out a neighbor or a friend. But I'm just thinking how much we carry forward, and it's making me reflect on my own experience, that would then inform almost like the things we do without thinking, right? Like if you hear that somebody's having a hard time, you probably have some pretty deeply wired or deeply etched in things that come from your family history that the person next to you might not, and think how that complicates things as we get into our own hard times and we want to help our own friends and neighbors. So I just find it interesting.
It is. And I think that something about that could make it, because it is automatic, it's like the thing you do, it's the appropriate thing to do. But like the appropriate thing that your family always did maybe was giving a casserole or something. Mm-hmm. And if that's not something that you have ingrained in you as like the thing you want or the thing you need or like the thing that's done, you may not receive it the same way it's intended. Or you may look at what somebody else is doing and think, oh, that's interesting. So yes, it's complicated and there's a lot more to it than just dropping off casseroles.
Agreed. I guess for me, when I was thinking about like how to define what a hard time is, and I'm keeping this largely in the framework of motherhood and you know, we're moms. But there's like almost two big buckets when I think about it. And one are like the type of big ticket hard times that we all immediately recognize and that kind of are easy to define from the outside. So you mentioned, you know, having a baby. There's going through like a cancer diagnosis, losing a parent, losing a job, going through a breakup. There are some things that even though they are very difficult, we have come to accept kind of the language and the framework around them as a society where you're like, oh, I get it. That family is going through a difficult diagnosis. And then we have like, it's almost like the logic train flows out from there. And then I feel like there's this other kind of more nebulous hard time that I think a lot of moms experience and myself included, and don't always know how to give language to. And that would be things that are either maybe they're more nebulous or more abstract, that it's just it's a hard season of life and you're not quite sure how to put a name to it, except that it's hard. Or maybe it's very intensely private and it's something that's happening more inside you or inside your most intimate relationships that it doesn't have a definition that's easy to like say to the world, you know, my grandmother passed away, like we need help. And so I just think that's important to recognize. And I think those of you listening, some of you maybe have experienced one and not the other, or vice versa, or both. So yeah.
Yeah. And Sarah, isn't it interesting how sometimes there's a huge disconnect between the things that feel hard to you and the things that other people think should feel hard to you? I'm thinking of like a family death as an example. So you could have a death in your family that was expected. It's a bummer, but you knew it was coming. Maybe you weren't particularly close to that relative, whatever it is. And like societally, that's recognized. And there's this like outpouring of support that maybe you don't really feel like you need, where there could be something happening internally that feels huge.
Yeah.
But you don't, but it feels kind of complainy because it doesn't tick the box, mm-hmm. or doesn't like, you know, it's not under the category or in the bucket of the big ticket item, or it can be really overwhelming to talk about. Maybe it's something you're so caught up in that you don't even want to talk about it. Like there's so many levels of complication. And I think that even just assuming like the way we kind of culturally assume that like a death in the family is going to be super hard on everybody, maybe it isn't, like, you know, and maybe like it hasn't really affected you that much in more than like a blippy kind of way. Like, let's get through this weekend and then everything's going to kind of go back to normal, where there could be something happening to your next door neighbor or someone you see every day in the school drop off or pickup line. And it's a big thing that they can't go public with for a variety of reasons. Yes. Or they just don't want to. It's like, just because there's not like a, I don't know, like an event attached to it that they, that's a public event, doesn't mean it's not happening. And it might even be harder than those public events.
I'm so glad you brought that up. And it sounds so like Instagram cliche to say, but it's just a really good reminder that the way we present outwardly to the world, and that includes you and me on this podcast and in whatever like public profile we have going on online, the way we present publicly to the world just may not tell the whole story. And it's not because people are fake and lying and covering up all their problems. Sometimes it's as simple as there is no outward manifestation. If you have a new baby or you're going through chemo treatment, or there are some times where it's there's visual cues on the outside that like, oh, wow, that family's got something going on right now. I can tell. But there are so many situations that present very like typically on the outside where you just don't know what's going on the inside. So it's a good reminder. I'm reminding myself this, you know, as well as we talk.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. And when we get back in, we're just going to kind of jump into some conversation, Sarah, about the way we individually react when we have hard times and what we're seeking, what we sometimes think we're seeking versus what we actually need. And then maybe we can, you know, try to circle around to some helpful tips or thoughts about how to seek the help you really need and maybe how to help other people that maybe are in your sphere and you're not 100% sure where they fall on that, like, how hard is this hard time spectrum. Yeah. So we'll be right back. Sarah, I've talked a lot on the show about the way my body has changed in my 40s. And one of the biggest challenges has been shopping. When clothes fit a certain way for the first couple decades of your adult life, and then that changes, there's just a lot of trial and error that goes into finding what looks and feels best. And that's why I'm so excited about our new sponsor, Armoire.
Yes, I love this. So Armoire is a designer women's clothing rental service that's all about helping you look and feel great while saving you time and money. With Armoire, you can rent high-end clothing at a fraction of the cost. So you can try out styles you've been curious about, maybe like a romper or a prairie dress, without committing to own it forever. I can see this being so helpful for pregnant, nursing, and postpartum moms whose sizes are changing, whose lives are changing, but who still want some great options in their closet.
Yeah. And when you sign up, Armoire will ask you if you're pregnant. So they're all set up to help with those transitions. Sarah, you and I are both trying out Armoire's unlimited plan and loving it so far. And listeners, Armoire is giving you 50% off your first month plus a bonus item. That's your first month of any monthly plan, 4-item, 7-item, or unlimited for $40, $60, or $125.
Such a good deal. Become an Armoire member today and start having fun getting dressed again. Go to armoire.style/momhour to get 50% off your first month of clothing rental from Armoire. That's armoire.style/momhour. And we'll put that link in the show notes as well. Again, it's armoire.style/momhour for 50% off your first month plus a bonus item.
We are welcoming back our sponsor, Quince, to the show today. Sarah, right now I am experiencing cooler evenings and mornings in the Midwest, so it is just a great time to hang out in the washed silk pajamas I got from Quince last spring. These are seriously comfy and luxurious pajamas, and the price point is pretty amazing.
Well, Megan, you know I love the crossbody bag I got from Quince, and I've been eyeballing a cashmere sweater for cozy season. You can't beat these prices and the quality, and it's just so fun to shop their site.
Quince is a one-stop shop for curated luxury goods shipped direct from the world's best specialist factories. So Quince does all the sourcing work for you, so you know you're getting the best quality products made sustainably using fair trade practices. And Quince removes the middleman, so you're also getting those super luxurious goods at a great price. Their totally transparent prices are often 50 to 80% less than what you'd see for similar products elsewhere.
Quality shouldn't be a luxury. You deserve it. Try Quince today. And now there's a brand new offer for our listeners. 10% off your first purchase of $100 or more when you use the special code MOM10. Just go to onequince.com and use that code M-O-M-10, MOM10. You'll still get 365-day free returns, but many of their collections sell out immediately, so you'll want to move quick. Again, go to onequince.com. That's O-N-E-Q-U-I-N-C-E.com, onequince.com, and use the code MOM10.
Okay, Sarah, so let's start by talking about how we individually react to hard times. So I'm just wondering, is your inclination to like find a friend to vent to early? Do you power through? Do you seek professional help? I'll go first. I think my inclination is to not complain a lot to anybody to whom complaining might, I don't know, like put me in the spotlight as someone in need of help or something. And that it's a kind of a very uncomfortable place for me to be. And even when something major happens, and I've had several, I mean, the last 5 years of my life has been pretty eventful when we've talked about like Megan's, you know, no good, very bad, you know, extended period of time.
Yeah.
It's pretty unusual for me to complain about just day-to-day hardships. And then when something really big does happen, I'll tell people, but almost feel awkward. Like I don't really know, like now what? And it's not like I don't want help. I do. And it's not, I don't blame myself or anything like that. It's more just like, ugh, this is just going to create this like attention loop, attention on something I don't want attention on. Or like now I have to figure out how to now deal with the fact that people feel something for me, like feel empathy for me. Like now I have to deal with that on top of what I'm already dealing with, or I have to kind of figure out how to navigate, I don't know, their feelings about what's happening to me. And that's not to say like, I don't have friends who are dumping on me or anything like that, or like making my problems worse. It's not at all. It's just a natural inclination, I think, to downplay hard things and to focus on not hard things and to present with that first. So I think sometimes that's great because I don't dwell on stuff too long that doesn't need to be dwelled on. And sometimes it's bad. Often it's bad because when things are really wrong, I don't know really how, like, I don't want to add. It's not that I don't know how. I know how to ask for help. I just sometimes just don't want to. And I wonder if sometimes it just makes it harder for me.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. This is one of those scenarios where you and I have our kind of opposite type personality types, but sometimes we land in the same place. And I think this is kind of one of those, because I think there's a lot of similarities for me as what you're describing. What I notice, and all of this is like, do what I say, not what I do. I don't think I'm good at this. I think I have a lot of issues in this area. So as I, I do, as I was thinking about this, I am relentlessly, like, detrimentally self-reliant. That is like that's a personality trait of mine. And so that has its upsides when it comes to like figuring stuff out, doing things by myself, not wanting help. And even if I need help, I want it to be like, on my terms. I want someone to do what I told them to do. Like I just, it's really hardwired in me. And so what happens to me if there is a hard time is I truly believe in my core that I can like DIY my own self-help. And I think that ultimately gets in my way, right? So like
I'm laughing because that's very similar to me, just for, maybe coming from a different reason, but very similar.
It's like you don't want, it's almost like you're such a nurturer and a carer of other people's feelings. You don't want to like burden or make other people uncomfortable. And I just think I can do it by myself, probably because I think I can do it better than anybody else. Like, we come from such different pathologies. But unfortunately, like, how that manifests is waiting way too long to say, like, oh, this feels really hard for me, or I'm scared of this, or this happened and it, like, and I don't know what to do with it, because I truly believe that I can, like, Brené Brown podcast my way out of, or like self-help book out of whatever I'm going through. And so that is my inclination. Obviously, the older we get, the more we know about ourselves, and we can get better at these things. And then I think, just also circling back to what I said about the big ticket items versus the more nebulous, I am just keenly aware of my privilege and of my relatively charmed life. I haven't had a lot of those big ticket, you know, cancer diagnosis, losing a parent, losing a job. Like, I do think sometimes I devalue my own hard times because they don't look like what it seems like it should look like. It doesn't have a label to attach to it. And I know how very privileged I am. So then I do that thing where I think Brené Brown calls it comparative suffering, where you're like, I should feel so lucky. Like, I don't deserve to be having a hard time, because da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I actually listened to a great conversation between Brené Brown and Esther Perel. Do you know her, Megan? She's the relationship.
What Should I Tell You, or what's a podcast? She's got a podcast. Yes. I can't think of the name.
She's wildly popular, mostly around relationships, but not only romantic relationships. And they talked a lot about this comparative suffering, and in the pandemic, especially, how we're all like, well, you know, we're faring better than most. Like, we're so lucky. My kids get to go to school in person, or like, we're financially secure. So that's another thing that I think is part of the way I react to hard times, is I delegitimize my own because they're either not as bad as other people's, or they don't have an easy box to be put in. So that was a lot.
Well, and not as bad as is such a I know you're acknowledging this already. You know, this, Sarah, but I'm just here to validate that, like, everything is relative. I mean, you can be like the poorest person in your town and probably still have access to more wealth than someone, you know, in a less wealthy country, or, you know, there's just so many different, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Like, everything. Sometimes when I'm feeling like overwhelmed or thinking like I have too much on my plate, I'll just laugh at myself and be like, it's just like a ridiculous thing to say, because, you know, relative to lots of other people, I get to podcast for a living, you know? Yeah. So it's like, there's always that, and we can't escape that. By the way, Esther Perel's podcast is called Where Should We Begin?
Yes.
I knew I was wrong about that, but yeah, that's wildly popular. Sarah, this is not necessarily related to what you just said, but it made me think of like that Instagram post I wrote a few weeks ago, where I was talking about kind of like being a power thrower.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, you know, the people who just be like, so all these bad things are happening, and it starts to feel like it's piling on. So you've got whatever your struggles are that are your internal, you know, things that are happening in you. Then you've got your close contacts and community, and that maybe your family, your friends, whatever's happening to them, what's happening under your roof. And then like what's happening in the world, and all of those things sometimes pile on to a degree where like it can feel like you're overreacting to something that's happened to you, but actually you're reacting to the whole soup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's another thing to keep in mind. Like, it's not just about what's happening to you today. Like, we are all affected by what's happening globally and what's in the air around us. We can't escape that. That's, even if we do a really good job of like filtering our news and social media, it's still out there. It's like in the air.
It is.
The other thing I wanted to mention, because I just think it'll make people laugh, is that for that Instagram post, I took a couple selfies of myself, obviously.
I know which one. And if you listeners, if you follow us on Instagram, it was probably like at least a month ago now.
Yeah,
and it's a beautiful selfie of Megan's face, like just, you know, her creamy skin and her cute hair. But keep going.
So I took several in a row, and I just was like feeling, I don't know, pensive. And I just grabbed a couple selfies and I sent them to Sarah and was like, be honest, like, what is this? How do these strike you? And you chose the least pensive looking one. I mean, I still look more pensive than I usually would in a photo, but we laughed because there was one of me where I looked kind of like I was about to cry, and I really wasn't. It's just how the camera caught me. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that and I was like, I would not be able to handle the amount of sympathy I would get for that photo. Yeah. Like the amount of like well-meaning, loving, comforting words that would come my way if I were to post a photo of myself looking like I'm on the verge of tears would make me so intensely uncomfortable that, like, I can't do it. There's no, it's just, I said it's laying it on a bit thick, I think is what I said. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. And that is actually, that's a really good reminder too of what we said at the beginning, which is like, there's what's going on internally, and then there's the way that we choose to communicate or present that. And one of those ways, you and I are public in a certain way. And it's just a good reminder that, like, even the hard stuff has to be curated in some way. And curation is not necessarily insidious. It's not fake right. or lying. It's also you wanted that day to start an authentic conversation about when the world seems like it's piling up on you, and you chose a visual that's a selfie. At the same time, I think there in some circles there is this sort of performative, like, hard times Olympics,
yes.
you know, where people yeah. do yeah. actually post photos of themselves crying because, first of all, the algorithm loves it. Like, Instagram loves. Right. They will show that post to more people. It's just crazy. There's a lot of, like, I don't even know what my point is, but there's a lot to unpack there, even yeah, in that yeah. simple gesture. But, and yet, I mean, I'm on your side. What you were doing was starting a conversation that made a lot of moms feel less alone. And we saw that from the comments on the post.
Well, one more thought before we move on from just, like, this kind of complicated conversation about outward and inward presentation of what's happening. You know, sometimes if someone isn't presenting what's happening in their world 100% accurately, because who does? Nobody does, right? It's like impossible. A lot of times it's not about, like you said, Sarah, it's not about being fake or like lying. It's self-protection. Mm-hmm. Like, not everybody can handle the sympathy of the world. Not everyone wants that kind of attention on themselves. And so I think that there's, like, that line to walk between being, like, inaccurately happy and optimistic and like that toxic positivity all the right. time when that's not true. But then on the flip side, if you really open yourself up to being, like, too raw all the time, it brings with it a certain kind of attention that not everyone wants either, and can also feel equally disingenuous. Like, yeah. if I posted a picture of myself crying, that would have maybe represented a moment in that day where I felt like crying, but it wouldn't that's what would be sitting there on our feed for 24 hours.
Yeah. yeah.
Is me with a tear rolling down my face. And that's not how I feel for 24 yeah. hours. I might feel that way for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I just think we're all doing it. We're all curating, whether we're posting on social media or going to the grocery store.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Like, yeah. And it, like, the next time you feel really, really bad, notice that when you walk into the grocery store, you probably still pull yourself together enough to walk through the grocery store because you probably just don't want the attention, yeah. you know, or you don't. Yeah. You just want to be normal for a few
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on to more of, like, the what we need, what we want, what we think we want when we're having a hard time, sort of that helping part. And I'm just going to use love languages, which I know we talk about a lot. Not everyone loves them and not everyone gets into them. But I think that it's an interesting bucket framework. So, like, 5 buckets. Of different kinds of ways help can be offered and received. I find it helpful for me when I default to thinking I want or need, like, a specific kind of help, or only can offer a specific kind of help, to remind myself that all people have different needs and that there's actually a lot of ways to do this. So if you're not familiar with the love languages, I'll just touch on them really quickly. And then we can kind of talk about, maybe for ourselves, examples of how, even it doesn't really matter which one of these is your favorite in regular life. I have examples of how each and every one of these has been helpful to me in some way at a time or another, even if I don't think of it as something I want. So, like, one of the love languages, which would be how you show and or receive love, would be touch, gifts, acts of service, like doing nice things for people, words of affirmation, and quality time. And so, I mean, I think all of those things, like, maybe someone just really needs a hug, but maybe they don't want a hug. Maybe mm-hmm. they really would just like their day brightened by, like, an unexpected gesture. Like, you give them a gift card. Maybe if you came and, like, raked the lawn because they're stuck at the hospital and there's no way for them to get back mm-hmm. before, like, the snow starts to fall on the leaves. And I've been in that position before. Maybe they just need to hear acknowledgement that they're going to get through something, or it's tough, but they're doing a great job, or some other kind of affirmation. Like, you see how much they care about the people in their circle. Like that can look like a lot of different mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
Not even related to the crisis at hand yes. necessarily.
Yes.
And then quality time. Like sometimes all I want is someone to take me away and distract me and do something fun with me and spend time with me. So like all five of those are not my, they're not all five equal in my life as like a day-to-day love language. But like when something is going badly, I have leaned on all five of those mm-hmm. And really gotten a lot out of each one.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious if you think your normal dominant love languages, which you can remind everybody what your like top two are also the two ways you feel most supported in hard times. I could see them, you know, I could see that tracking, but maybe in the hardest of hard times, there's actually like another love language that shines through for you.
So it's really interesting because I would rank touch and words of affirmation. Those are the ones that always come up in my, you know, in my quiz when I take a quiz. Yeah. Those are the ones that are my two highest. When I am having, like when I'm really sad or having a really hard time, I really don't want people to touch me. To me, it feels mm-hmm. like, I don't know, uncomfortable and pandering yeah. unless it's a significant other. And in that case, when I haven't had a significant other, I just float in the wind because I don't get it and I don't want it. I don't seek it out from anybody else. And then when I do have a significant other, that's all I want. And that's like all I think I need. So it's kind of like a little bit of a flip side. Interestingly, gifts, acts of service, and quality time, while they don't rank as high for me in normal life, are all ways that people have shown up for me that yeah. I've really appreciated because sometimes they're really filling a need I don't even know. I wouldn't identify that need myself. I wouldn't identify like, gosh, it would be really helpful if someone put gas in my car or picked my kid up from school or, you know, set like put together a girls' night for me. Because those are all things I feel like I can and should do for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But when times are hard, those are the things I don't do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what about you?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. My normal highest two love languages for how I love to be loved are acts of service and words of affirmation. I think the one that is not my highest in normal times, but is like bubbling to the surface here as we talk is quality time. And I think if you read about quality time in the love languages, in the actual like articles and books, I was enlightened when I read about it because it's easy to think like that means like a date night or like a girls' weekend. The way they describe it is really feeling deeply listened to and paid attention to, hence the quality and not quantity.
Right.
And that can be incredibly, like restorative for me if I'm going through a hard time because I am that relentless, stubborn, like self-reliant DIYer of my own destiny. I have to be in a pretty like dark place to recognize that a deep conversation with a good friend or my significant other or a professional therapist is actually like that kind of quality time where like the person is showing up and has nowhere else to be except to listen to my insane ramblings can be very, very helpful to me. But it takes a long time for me to think that I need that or to have the idea. Whereas in normal life, when the bopping along, I think we had that phrase in another episode that I like the bop along times, my quality time, like cup is filled here and there. It's not something that like it's not the way that I feel and receive and even show love. So that's the one that like feels a little different in hard times versus bop along times.
Yeah, I get that. And I've experienced from you how like there's definitely a different, presentation or tone when you're coming with a like I need to talk about this, and it happens very rarely. Like it's rare,
yeah.
Rare enough that when you have that, I pay attention because it's like, yeah. Oh, this is different. This is Sarah yeah. not bopping along. Yeah. Sarah's not bopping today. This is a no bop zone. Yeah. So, well, I think that's really interesting, and it also leads me, you know, just that whole conversation about like needing different things sometimes from different people. Also kind of made me think about the fact that sometimes in the moment you don't know what you need or you have a hard time distinguishing between what you think you need and what you really like, what would really be helpful. And sometimes even who you want to fill that need for you.
Yeah.
So for myself, I have had a lot of experience feeling kind of sad or like left out or crabby because I didn't feel like my boyfriend or when I was married, my husband or my closest friends, like, intuited what I needed. But then later I realized that what they actually did offer relieved a big burden. And I mean, like, there's a lot going on there to pick apart, and it's sometimes dependent on the relationship. Like, when I feel like I just want you to, here I am an hour away and I'm having a really hard time and I just want you to come drive here and, like, give me a big hug and that's all I want. And, you know, my boyfriend is thinking, but what you really need is for me to go to your house and, like, close up your pool for the season because you're not home to do that. Like, that's just an example of, like, something that actually happened in my life. And I was really upset. Like, I was really upset that he did not drive to come give me a hug. And then afterward, I'm like, man, if he hadn't gone and done that, then I would have had to come home and deal with it. And like, that would have meant 2 weeks later, I would have been having, like, a breakdown because I couldn't handle this thing on my own. And so I don't know how to exactly, like, I think my feelings were valid that I wanted the thing I didn't get. And then also in the end, I still got what I needed. And like, it's so, like, with the closest people, you're kind of safe to have those disappointments.
Yes.
And like, and for that to all be wrapped up in the package of hard times.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you're so right. It was a valid reaction for you to not feel like you were getting what you wanted. And it was also a valid effort on his part.
Right.
And it really was something that helped in its own way. I was thinking about this, and I often kind of misattribute the nature of the hard time for convenience and shorthand sake. So if I am having a hard time for whatever reason, and people kind of say, what's going on? Or like, or how are you doing? I will, if it's going to sound like I'm lying, and it doesn't sound like that, but I will often attribute the hard time to things that people can relate to. Lack of sleep. Like, I haven't been sleeping well. Work stress, you know, overwhelm with the house, this and that. And it's like, it's that societally acceptable, like, list of things that moms are known to struggle with, that people are like, oh yeah, I know how that is. Like, that's so hard. Yeah. Okay. Now we can, like, now we're now,
let's
again,
move on.
Like, we, well, and we have a label, like, we can talk about
right.
that. And then what happens is I will get offers for help with those things. Can I take the kids? Can I, like, do you want to, like, escape and catch up on work for a few hours? Do you want, and then I think, no, I don't want those things. Like, this is not helpful at all. And it's because I'm not actually sharing what's actually wrong. And maybe I haven't even figured it out for myself, but that is a pattern I've noticed when it comes to, like, asking for the help you need or thinking, you know, other people thinking they're giving you what you need. It's really complicated. And I have noticed that that is a pattern. I will allow people to think that it's X, Y, and Z, where X, Y, and Z are recognizable, like, typical, like, work, house, kids, stress. And then when help is offered to alleviate those stressors, I realize, oh, that's not helpful because that's not actually what's bothering me.
Well, it's sometimes you don't even know. And I'm thinking of, like, the shorthand that we probably use with each other. I know one word you use when you're describing yourself in the not best mood is grumpy. I've noticed you use that word a lot. And I use the word stressed or busy, or, like, everything is just, there's a lot, like, a lot on my plate. And sometimes I'll think that's what's wrong. And then when I really think about it, I'm like, actually, I'm just sad. Or like, actually, it's not that at all. Like, grumpy is maybe not always what you actually feel. And maybe, like, tired. You know, I think I mentioned on a recent episode that when I am emotionally spent, it feels like tiredness. Like, I feel exhausted, but I'm not really tired. I'm not.
Right.
Nothing's really happened to make me tired.
Yes.
I slept well last night. I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm actually sleepy and my body isn't tired. It's just the way I am manifesting loneliness or sadness feels like exhaustion. And so sometimes I don't even know.
Oh my gosh. I'm like I'm having a lot of, like, little epiphany moments right now. We should take a break.
Okay.
But I know we have a lot more. You have a lot more in store for us when we come back.
I hope it won't make you grumpy, Sarah. It's making me tired just thinking about it. Is that true?
We'll be right back.
We have talked so much about meal planning on the podcast, Sarah, and here's why we keep coming back to the topic. It's not a set it and forget it thing. I go through big swings with how motivated I feel to plan ahead or what kind of food sounds good to me seasonally and what systems work with our schedule. And whenever I'm in a rut, our sponsor Prep Dish is there to re-inspire me.
I so agree, Megan. Prep Dish meal plans are a great way to re-energize your prepping and planning meal mojo. Allison, the founder, is a chef and dietitian, and she sends you an email each week with a meal plan, a grocery list, and then, this is key, prep ahead instructions where you can batch prepare several meals in one session. This works great for busy families like mine who have limited time on the weeknights, but more flexibility to prep ahead on the weekends.
Right. So you do all your shopping and chopping in one block of time, and then these delicious, healthy meals come together in around 20 minutes on the nights you choose to serve them. I'm eyeballing the slow cooker carne asada from the keto menu this week, and I love that Allison's got keto, paleo, and gluten-free plans that you can switch between, plus a super fast menu that cuts all your prep time for the whole week down to around an hour.
To get 2 weeks of Prep Dish meal plans free, go to prepdish.com/themomhour. Again, that's prepdish.com/themomhour for your first 2 weeks free. We are welcoming back the Cozy Family Organizer app as a sponsor today. Megan, you know I'm a sucker for calendars and systems. You could kind of say they're my love language.
Oh, I know, Sarah. And I'm a little more hesitant because I don't want to get bogged down in a complicated tech setup if it's not going to save me time and hassle in the end, you know?
Totally. And lucky for you, Cozy's totally free and it's really easy to set up. It works with your existing digital calendar, whatever you're already using, and then it'll pull different family members' schedules into one color-coded view, and you can see at a glance what everybody's got going on. I mean, that's something, right?
Yeah, this is really cool. I guess that's the reason Cozy is the number one organizing app families use to juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, carpools, doctor's appointments, you name it. You can even use Cozy to help manage your meal plan, recipe collection, and shopping list.
And like I said, it's free, so there's no risk to try. Just look for the Cozy Family Organizer in the App Store. That's Cozy spelled C-O-Z-I. Again, just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, to get the free app and start organizing your family's schedule today.
Okay, Sarah. So when we talked a lot about our inability, apparently, to identify our own feelings or like get help that we need. I mean, please, I guess this is just a great example of why all these hundreds of episodes in, no one should ever like think we've got it all figured out or that
these are not
we are here to offer
they're not qualified instructive.
Advice. Yes. We're just sharing, you know, the human frailty, like we all have it. And dealing with problems is one of the hardest things that we can do as humans, either our own problems or other people's. And I just, before we move on to like the topic of maybe how we can help other people, I just want to throw out this validation, this piece of, I guess, wisdom or whatever, maybe it's not even wise, but just to like validate for yourself that when you are going through a hard time, you know, Sarah, we both talked about how we're not always 100% transparent about what's happening, or we're grumpy when we get the wrong response, or, you know, we may even feel like we want to lash out at our significant other because we didn't get our need met or whatever we thought our need was. And like, let's just all remember that your emotions are heightened. And when your emotions are heightened, you might feel what seems later irrationally irritated or overlooked or sad or whatever it is, just in general, and like get deep in your feels. Mm-hmm. And I don't like, I just want to acknowledge that. Like, we might, it's really easy for us to be sitting here right now on a random Thursday where we're both feeling pretty good, I assume, looking back at ourselves and recognizing our patterns, but it's like impossible in the moment. And I just want to, before we move on, I just want to like acknowledge that that's true.
I think that's a good to acknowledge. And another thing, this is words of affirmation for all of you listening. And it's kind of goes along the line. If you've ever heard somebody say, like, if you're the type of parent who's even asking questions about how best to support your kid through something, you're already a good parent. Like, just by being aware of the opportunity to do good, you're doing good. And I would say the same is true here when it comes to self-reflection. Like, if you are even open to looking at your own patterns around hard times, you're probably showing up really well for those around you, because it takes a lot of adulting to get to the point where you're like, huh, I do notice this pattern about myself. So I guess that's just like words of affirmation for everyone who's looking at this kind of stuff in their own life.
Okay, so that's great. And yes, I agree. We're all like in a place where we're just trying is part, like just being open to having these conversations and thinking about this stuff is like part of the battle. So then all the conversation we've had so far mostly has been about our own tendencies and what we recognize about ourselves. So I'm just so curious, Sarah, when you know someone in your sphere, in your circles is having a really hard time, do you have a standard, like, you know, we talked a little bit about family of origin culture or what's happening around you culturally, what you recognize to be appropriate or right to do. But that can be very complicated by social media, which then creates levels of relationship that are often hard to suss out. And I think that for me, I am sporadic and all over the place when it comes to how I respond to a crisis. And I can give you a quick example because it's something that that I think about a lot. Like, what would be a way for me to show up better for people in my life? And sometimes I just don't know how. So the day that I posted that message, which was like on Instagram that we talked about, and you said it was over a month ago now. You're right. It was probably about a month ago. There had just been a really tragic death in my community, in my theater community, of a young, very young woman who I've played her mom before in theater productions, lost her twin sister. So like that was taking over my Facebook feed for days. There was all the speculation about like her death, and it was just really painful. And I was watching it all play out with this young group of kids, not children anymore, but the ages of my kids, just about, my older kids. And like, I kept kicking the can down the road thinking, well, I don't want to reach out to her right now because there's everybody is, and she's dealing with so much.
Yeah.
And then it started to kind of, you know, calm down. And I thought, well, she probably just wants a break. She probably just wants some normalcy. And then it turned into like, well, I don't really, you know, we don't really see each other very often. We don't have that much of a relationship. I didn't know her sister. And so I basically talked myself in and out of doing anything at all. And now here I am like 5 weeks later going, okay, well, now what do I do? It's like, I didn't miss a window. I know that I didn't, but I'm far enough removed from this person that how on earth do I now go back and like make a meaningful gesture? And it's not a casserole. She doesn't need me to drop off food or a Starbucks gift card. She probably doesn't want to spend time with me. I don't know that my hug would add anything at this point. She's got her friends, you know, like that's, I think, where it gets very complicated. And not to make this about me, but I'm just saying, I think this is why we get paralyzed.
Yes.
And why sometimes as a person struggling, you don't get the response you want because the people on the other side are having the exact same kind of mental, like, you know, issues that I'm having right now, but trying to like logic their way through this.
Yeah. No, I think that's really common. And it does make me think, like, I almost wish that there was a, like, an automatic thing that we talked about from the family of origin. Like, I can see it being, I do love to send snail mail and I love to write cards and letters, but I don't do it as much as, you know, I used to before the internet. But I can see having like a set of pretty cards, not even sympathy cards or like not even specific to any one hard thing, but having just committing to just popping a note in the mail or popping a text into the ether. When all you can say is, I'm so sorry, I'm thinking of you. I mean, I think that's what the experts would tell us to do, right? Is just do one small authentic thing. But at the same time, do what I say, not what I do. I'm in the same boat as you, Megan. A lot of overthinking, a lot of wondering, am I important enough to this person to warrant this gesture? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, I don't want them to feel like they have to reply. If I send a casserole, I don't want a thank you note. Like, I don't want to put the burden.
You don't want to create more burden.
Exactly. Yeah. And then like you and I work in this like very content driven industry where like you read things like how to really help a new mom. Actually, we have an episode called that. And then it's like.
it really is in caps too. How to really help. Yes.
Right. And the implication is like they don't need like all those new baby gifts. They need you to like hire a cleaning service for their house. And it becomes this like, what's the best or the right way to help this person? So yeah, it can lead to a lot of mental gymnastics when in fact, probably the simplest answer is often the right one, which is to reach out authentically and meaningfully whenever you do it. I can tell you that people going through hard times, it's not like a linear thing where 5 weeks in, she's going to be like, oh, why is Megan reaching
she's
out
not
now?
Over it.
I'm over it. Yeah, no. Right. So, yeah.
You're right. You're right. And I think that overthinking can come, it can stem from a lot of different places in your personality, from wanting to, you know, maybe Enneagram one it right, like do it right. Or maybe in my case, maybe be appropriately nurturing and like in the correct way that doesn't, not even correct, but in the most helpful way that doesn't harm. I think I'm often very, wary of the idea that I might cause harm with what I do more than help. That's something that I think is often in my mind. And some of that's because of the way we personally react. So like whatever hangups we have about expressing hard times and then accepting help, we're going to project those hangups on other people who may not have the same hangups,
right?
who may love any gesture that you make and not find it annoying or overwhelming or anything. So you're so right, Sarah, like doing something is better than doing nothing and not overthinking. And like, you know, the simplest thing that you can do probably is, you know, at least a place to start. And I guess when you're talking about close family, close friends, it does get a little stickier. I'm curious, Sarah, if you've given any thought to like when you know someone in your inner circle maybe is struggling more than they're saying or like doesn't know how to ask for help. Do you go out of your way to try to find out what they need? Do you try to intuit what you think they need based on what we think they'd need? Like, how do you do that?
I think I mostly try to intuit. And I often start with like, What's a skill or a gift or a talent that I have that might be of service? I very much am an acts of service person in this regard. So I'm not like a big dinner cooker. That's not one of my natural born gifts. So I am less likely to bring a meal. I do have like a high proficiency when it comes to organizing things, keeping details straight. So depending on how close I am to someone, I might jump in and offer to just take a task or a series of tasks completely off their plate. This is a little example, and it's not exactly a hard time, but my brother's a brand new RN. He's a brand new nurse, like a mid-career shift in the middle of, well, he made the shift before COVID, but he is now a brand new nurse, in a COVID, like he sees COVID patients and stuff in our hospital locally. And it's an exciting time for him, but it's really intense. And I helped him go through, I printed out his schedule and I helped him like literally like almost block schedule or plan his weeks because he has all these crazy shifts and like, it's really, really intense in the first, you know, and any nurse would tell you the first year. And that is a skill that I have that he doesn't, that I felt like, okay, I can contribute my, I don't know, like my talents to this problem. So I think I come at it from a very problem-solving place, which in cases like my brother was very helpful. Like I was writing on his calendar, like this would be like a good day to like catch up on life and go to the grocery store and like,
right,
don't forget to exercise and like da 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 da. And like, it kind of became like a little silly at one point. That would be less helpful if what someone really needed was like a cry buddy, like a just to like sit in the sadness and cry together. I don't feel very, that's not like a natural gift of mine. So I guess, what do I do? I try to intuit and I try to match something that I can offer that really would be helpful, almost like in a problem solving way. And I think in some cases that works really well. And in some cases it probably doesn't. In some cases I miss the mark because that's, I'm not able to, I might be able to intuit it, but I don't know how to deliver. And that's where we get into that, like that overthinking or that doing nothing trap.
Yeah. For the people, interestingly, that practical action tends to be how I deal with helping people in my most inner circles. Mm-hmm. I have a harder time figuring out how to do that for people who aren't like really close to me, you know, and maybe that's not the appropriate place to be anyway. Like, you know, maybe it'd be really annoying if I showed up at like a friend's house who I'm not very close to and was like, hey, can I organize your closet? Or can I make an appointment for you? I mean, like maybe in that case, it's like, hey, I know about the service, you should check out. It's really cool. It will do this X, Y, and Z for you. Or like offering a resource or offering in a non-annoying way. Cause I know even that could be like when you're overwhelmed and someone sends you like a link to a resource, it's like, thanks a lot, you know?
Right.
Like one more thing for me to do. So I think if there's like any takeaway from this, it's like messy and hard and none of us get it right all the time. On the topic of, you know, not at least not wanting to cause harm, if even if you can't help not wanting to cause harm, there's been I don't know if it's an article, the same article that's been going around for a few years, but there's this concept that was created, I believe, by a psychiatrist or a social scientist. It's essentially like a series of circles. So in the middle, like concentric circles, they look like ripple. In the middle circle, you've got the person who is closest to the problem. So maybe they, you know, maybe it's someone whose husband has just died. I'll just use that as an example. The very closest person is the wife, right? Then you've got the concentric circles going out and it's like the kids are in the next circle. Well, probably not the kids. The kids are just as they're in that inner circle too. Maybe like the next one is like extended family. And the next one outside of that is like close friends, et cetera. It's like just goes out and out. And the idea is that anyone from the inner circles is allowed to like dump out. They're allowed to complain to the people on the outer
right rings, less affected. Yeah.
Less affected rings. But the people on the outside can only comfort back in. Mm-hmm. So like they're not allowed to talk to you about how hard it was. So if you're the person whose husband has just died, the person three rings out isn't allowed to go back to that person and talk about how hard it was when their, you know, brother died or whatever it is. Like it's even though they have their own traumas and their own griefs and they're both super valid. The one who's in the middle of this trauma takes precedence in this trauma. So it's like, it's, I just think it's really interesting. So it's, I think it's, they call it dump out, comfort in. Mm-hmm. And I like to think about that because I do think, you know, it's been kind of clinically proven that we're terrible listeners for the most part. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that humans try to relate to each other is by jumping on other people's problems to share our own. And sometimes we believe that makes us relatable. Sometimes maybe it is helpful, but as a, but the danger is making something all about you. And I think I have experienced this having been someone who's lost kind of a lot of people in my life. Like there is a, there's a line between relating and feeling like now this other person's problems about something that happened to them is now my problem when I'm the one going through something. Right. So I think that's just, we'll probably link that up in the show notes. It's an interesting way to look at it.
It is. And I think it's very helpful. It makes me think of, this is a slightly different take on it, but when my husband's father passed away, that was the first like death of any of our parents and the only so far. And it was very strange to be. So what was I? I was the partner of the kid of the man who died, right? Like, so my father-in-law passed away. I had known my father-in-law and had a relationship with him, a very dear relationship for at that point, 15 years, I think. It was in fact a loss for me, but it was obviously not even close to the type of loss that it was for my husband and his sister, and their stepmom. And so it is strange to be going through a hard time yourself that is less hard by degrees than the people around you. Because like you said, my role was to comfort in, right? But like, I wasn't completely neutral either. He was also a person in my life, and I, having not lost a lot of significant people in my life, it was like a pretty big deal. But for me, like I could only really comfort in, and then whatever you said, like, you know, vent out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was a strange middle ground to be in. And I bet we have some listeners who've experienced something like that, where you are having your own. It's not that I was like, oh yeah, this reminds me of the time that my other in-law died. Like I wasn't trying to bring another tragedy in, but I was experiencing my own grief and felt a little in the middle as one would, where I was no longer, I remember thinking, am I at the funeral? Am I one of the people comforting the family, or am I in the family?
Am I bereaved?
Yes. And I was a little bit of both. Like I was in that like receiving line. It was a strange middle place. And I'm sure I'm not the only one to have existed in that middle place.
Well, I also, when I was married, lost an in-law, and I will say it was one of the more difficult experiences of my life. Harder in some ways than losing my own parents, because when I lost my own parents, I knew exactly what I was supposed to, like, I knew where I was in the lineup. And when it was like my father-in-law, I really didn't feel quite like I could not figure out my purpose. It was really hard. And then again, you're having your grief, which is valid, but it doesn't feel valid by comparison or something. And so it was really hard to figure out who would be your comforter or who would be the person you could complain to. And so just acknowledging that, I think that it's a really hard place to be. And I'm sure a lot of people in our community have been in that spot. Well, let's wrap up by just talking, and maybe we can just quickly name a few surprisingly helpful things another person has done for us or people during hard times that have really helped. Because I think it's always good to have like a little stockpile of ideas so that we don't just default to the thing that seems most appropriate or easiest. I have one that popped into my head. So a around a year ago, we were going through like a really tough time with one of my kids, and we were not at the house for over a week. And when I got back, I really wanted to redo his bedroom. And I don't even remember who I mentioned. I offhand mentioned to one of my friends that I think I was looking for a new bed frame or something. I don't even remember how this got out there. But then next thing I knew, they had organized with like six other friends to basically just buy a new bed for my son. And that was really touching. It's not something I ever would have asked for. It's not something I would have felt like I needed, but it was really helpful because it was a time when I was spending a lot of money on not sleeping at home, you know? And so like there was a whole big chunk of budget I would have put toward that I was not. And it was really, really helpful in the end. It wasn't something I would have thought to ask for, but it was like a nice, creative, genuinely helpful gesture. And yeah. I think those three things, you know, helpful, genuinely helpful, and like creative were really, that was the key.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine, I feel like, is a lot less concrete or tangible. But a couple of things that come to mind is I think the people who know me best know that I need to be matched in certainty. So I can be, like I said, very like stubbornly self-reliant. And I can sometimes need someone to stand in front of me unafraid to be like, yeah, but you really don't seem like you don't have it all together right now. Like something is not right. So like, what could you do about that? And almost like, that challenger stand up for me is not quite right, but show themselves to be not afraid of like the mess, right? Of like, the fact that I don't have it all together. So that anyone who's close enough to do that has a special place in my heart, because like I said, I think I can put up a pretty good false front. I also think humor on the totally opposite side of the spectrum. Humor is not a love language. It's as defined by the five love languages, but just like you, I get very uncomfortable with sympathy or too much like earnest emotion. And I love humor. I communicate through humor. I'm snarky. I appreciate smart humor. So that's tricky. And I think when things seem really dark, people do not want to make a joke and have it land wrong, right? Understandably. But I think the people in my life who just know me well enough to know like when it's okay to laugh are huge gifts to me, because I will laugh at myself through like all the way through the tears, like through the end, because I find being a human very funny most of the time. And so I think anyone,
it is very funny, it is. Even in really hard times, it is very funny.
So I think I'm drawn to books and to podcasts and to like thought leaders. My favorite ones are the ones who think this is all really hilarious, even while it's terrible. So I think that's maybe surprising in that it may not be the thing you think your friend needs is like a meme or a joke or like a YouTube video, but humor should not be underestimated in its power. And for the right person, it might be exactly what they need.
I love that. And just hearing that brings me to one more that popped into my head that is also less concrete, but has a lot to do with like those people in your life who just know you so well that they can read you and, know your tendencies and maybe what you're really needing in the moment when you can't identify it for yourself. And one of the things that, and again, I'm just going to mention the Enneagram. I know we talk about Enneagram a lot here, but I'm an Enneagram too. So it's like, you know, they can be very outward serving, people pleasing, helping. But there can come a point when like I almost flip and become, well, it's in the Enneagram when you are under stress, you go to a different number, which is more domineering. And it's like, that's when I demand my needs get met. I can become quite like aggressively needy. Yeah. I don't really know how to put that, but like in a way that is, it can be like almost like from an angry place.
Yeah.
And having people who like hold a boundary around that is super duper important and actually makes me feel very secure.
Yes.
Like, because it's not a mean boundary. It's not like, this is how you are and I hate you. It's and like you suck and go away. It's more like this, I recognize this is how you are in this moment and I love you and like you're gonna be okay, but like I can't do that for you right now.
That's so profound.
Yeah. that, but like when you feel like you start to become a black hole, which is what I think that it's like, I was repelling help, repelling. And now suddenly it's flipped and I'm a vacuum and I just want to suck it all up.
You're trying to get yours, right? Like you're trying to get like what's been owed to you this whole time of being in that service mentality. Yeah.
Yeah. And so having someone kind of just recognize that and flip it and say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And you don't even, wouldn't even be good for you if I did. It's like humbling, but actually great. And there's been very, very few people in my life who have actually, walked that line appropriately. I think you're one, Sarah, and you probably don't even know it, but it's like, you probably don't even really know when you're like gently putting a boundary there, but I see it and like, I feel it. Okay. So I don't know. Anyway, I just think that's one of those things you can't necessarily do until you know someone super well, though.
Yeah, but it might be really helpful, actually, for our listeners. We're talking about ourselves, but like what is similar about what I said and what you said is someone who can call you on your patterns and your BS is a very special person. And so my patterns and my BS would be to act like I have everything together and I need zero help and everything's fine and I'm going to take care of it all. And what I said was someone who is like patient enough to be like, cool, but maybe can we keep talking about this? Because it seems like maybe that's a load of,
seems
you know,
like
what?
Perhaps. Like,
That when you said you feel secure, I like felt that, like literally resonated in my body. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It feels secure to have someone call you on your BS. And that's what you were saying. Like someone who knows you well enough to know that like, this is how you're reacting, but this isn't really what you need. And that is, we all need people like that in our life. So.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe the takeaway of this long, rather rambling conversation, I think, you know, was really quite revelatory for me in several ways, is just that we need people and and I know that's one of those things that's like, it's so hard to get those relationships when you don't feel like we hear from moms all the time who are saying like, how do I find that sister friend? Like, how do I find those people who I can really rely on? And I don't, this isn't the episode to go into that because it's over. Right. We don't have time. And even if we did, you and I would be talking about how we've done it, which is different from how anybody else might do it. But just reiterating that those, like, even if it's two, even if you have two people in your life, even if you have one, like one person in your life who holds that role, that is like a precious, precious thing. And really the rest is window dressing. It's great. And I like having a big social circle. But really quality really matters here. And I guess that's like it's not a particularly helpful place to wrap up, but I think it's true.
I think it's true. And I think this changes over time. So you and I can be, you know, are very, very close and can be of help and service to one another. But we've been friends for 10 years and probably three or four of that has been like a more intimate level. And that's just one relationship. So just a reminder that if you're not feeling that with people right now, that's not a permanent state, right? Like the people who feel like casserole dropper offers now, with time and vulnerability and life circumstance may be those like inner circle for you in a year or two. Cause there's opportunity there. So.
And I just have to laugh that I think we probably used the word casserole 7 times in this episode. And I have to guess that there is probably a whole bunch of millennial moms listening and going like, I'm sorry, what? Casseroles? I'll just say it's a throwback to probably more our parents' generation, right?
Yes.
And it's like, it's one of those things that's stuck. But I don't know that people eat casseroles anymore.
I don't think so.
Please send us an email if you love casseroles.
Unless you count like... I mean, enchiladas would be like a modern take on a casserole. Lasagna... I don't know.
Yes,
this is like the part two of this is not about casseroles, but it could be. It could be.
It could be. All right. Well, what do we have coming up, Sarah?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. So we have listener questions episodes coming up, and longtime listeners, you know, we usually do them in pairs. This time we're pairing a More Than Mom listener questions episode with a regular like Tuesday parenting listener questions episode. So coming up on Sunday, you'll get the More Than Mom version, which will be questions that are not about parenting, a little bit of everything, but listeners asking us about, I don't know, career, work, love, fashion, style, all the More Than Mom type of stuff.
And our personal hygiene, maybe.
maybe. And then on Tuesday, we'll follow that up with the listener questions episode like you're used to getting, which is moms bringing us their sort of parenting and family life challenges. I will say there's probably a day or so to get in a couple more questions if you're hearing this right when it comes out on Tuesday and want to shoot an email to hello@themomhour.com. You can always try. If it's too late and we've already recorded or we've already chosen our questions, we can file it away for next time. So it never hurts to try. And that's a great way. Just make sure you put like listener question in the subject line, and that's hello@themomhour.com. And we read every single one, and we really do use them. Even if we can't take it on the show, we use it to just kind of stay in tune with what you all are wondering about. So that will be fun. And Megan will be back with everybody on Sunday.
Talk to you then.